COVID peeps. Oh my gosh. Welcome to the show. Let's have some real talk. Let's just start off by talking about work. Have you ever worked your butt off? Like truly put in the extra hours, crossed all the T's, dotted all the I's, only to watch Chad from accounting get the promotion while you get a thanks so much for your hard work. Same. We've been told as women for years that if we just work harder, negotiate better, lean in more, we'll get what we deserve. But what if I told you that that's a total lie? Okay, that's what today's guest, the absolute powerhouse, Reshma Sajani, is here to talk about. Now, you might know her as the founder of Girls Who Code, the CEO of Moms First, or the woman who has dedicated her career to saying enough to the workplace BS holding women back. She's also a New York Times bestselling author and the voice behind My So-Called Midlife, aka the podcast you need in your life. Now, Reshma is going to break it all down, why we're still getting paid less, why burnout isn't a personal failure, it's a system failure, and most importantly, how we can stop blaming ourselves and start demanding what we're worth. So if you're feeling undervalued, underpaid, or just over it, this episode is for you. Let's get into it. Reshma, welcome to Workday Playdate. This is a dream for me. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Erin, for having me. It's great to be here.
Oh, okay. So I told you before we hit record, we have a theme for the show every month. This month, we are talking about working through uncertainty, which I'm just like, right? Yep. So I always love to set an intention at the top of the show for either you, myself, this conversation, just a one-word intention. What would you say our intention is for this show?
Present.
Oh, yes. Okay, tell me why you chose that.
Well, it's interesting. We were just talking about our friend Raw Goddess, and we were talking about, as you know, like podcast life is a grind. It's hard. It's a lot of work. And it's like, you know that you have to just be in it for the long haul. And so it's kind of what she said to me. She said, you know, I would see this in every conversation that you're in as a moment for you to be present.
Yes.
Because I am like most moms, right? Most activists, like I got 20 things going on, you know, like as I'm jumping into you, my son didn't get into the right kindergarten program because I didn't fill out the form right. And I'm like calling the, you know what I mean? And I'm like, why am I such a fucking idiot? Like I'm like epic mom fail. And I'm like, I'm trying to always do too much and you can't do much. And I did my son wrong. Right. So like, I'm literally coming from that call with my husband and like the school coordinator, right, to like this. And so I want to be present, you know, though there's so much going on. Right. And that's how it mostly is for everybody.
I want to like hug you right now through the computer, because truly I feel like a lot of people feel seen. And I have a feeling, just a gut intuition, all will be well with kindergarten. Kindergarten's a huge deal. I just had my son go, and it's like a whole life change in itself. But I feel you, because as working moms, especially, there's seven things running through our head at all times. So presence is hard, but when you focus intentionally on it, we can get shit done, which is what you said to me earlier, which I'm like, let's go. You are doing so much good in this world. And you're an activist, like you mentioned. You wrote a book called Pay Up. And this is truly, I think, what is going to resonate with my community. We call ourselves the Improve It Peeps. That's my community here. My peeps. What can we talk about this book? Let's start here, because you've done so many things, but you've talked about that we've been fed this lie about work and success as women. Yeah. So could you talk about that? And what's the biggest myth about women in the workplace today?
So Erin, I am like laser focused on American motherhood right now, because like we make it so damn hard to be a mom in America.
Yes.
Like, so damn hard. And we are doing God's worth. You know what I mean? We are like, just shout out to all my mom peeps out there. It's like, this doesn't happen without us, right? We are literally letting the human race continue to sustain itself. And we make it so damn hard. Like everything is about, I mean, before I've even had my cup of coffee, right? Why is the school day 8:30 to 3 and the work day 9 to 5? Like I am set up to fail before I've even walked out of my house. And it's all like that, right? It's all like I was just thinking about, like, I was just telling you the mistake I made on the kindergarten application. I'm like, man, if I can't figure it out, all these moms who English isn't their first language or have less time than I do, if you made it so hard that I couldn't figure it out, right? And made a mistake, like everybody's feeling that way. And so you just kind of like throw up your hands. But what does society tell us when we feel this way? They say, well, it's your fault. Like if you had a little more confidence, if you color coded your calendar, if you got a mentor, right? Like you are failing, you are broken, you need to get it together. Not that like we are disserving you. And so I wrote Pay Up in many ways because I saw this con very clear in the pandemic. I don't know what it was about the pandemic, but for me, like I just had my second child. So I had a newborn baby. I was homeschooling my then 5-year-old. And I was trying to save my nonprofit Girls Who Code from being shut down. And the pandemic was such a clarifying moment for me because when I wasn't, you know, having it all or doing it all or failing at a mom or failing at, you know, at Girls Who Code, I would think, oh, it's my fault. I didn't get enough sleep. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I married the wrong man. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I just don't have my childcare situation set up or just like, I need to take magnesium, whatever it was. Right. It was like, I'm the problem. Right. Me. If I just was a little bit better, if I was just better, you know what I mean? Like this wouldn't feel so hard. And the pandemic was like, oh no. Cause it opened us up to everybody's living rooms and it opened all of us up to a lot of honesty and vulnerability that we were all struggling. Because before that, like on Instagram, if you saw a picture of me and my family on vacation, you'd be like, wow, you're wearing matching outfits, you're smiling. No, we fought the whole time. The whole time.
Yep.
It sucked. And I needed a vacation for my vacation. But we all lied about what was happening in our homes and we didn't ask for help. You know, we hid our pictures from our kids. We said networking lunch when our kids had asthma, you know, like at school. Like And the pandemic was just like, you couldn't hide it anymore. And you realize it's not just me, it's 85 million of us. We are all living the same hell, right?
Rajma! Yes!
And that's what inspired me to start my book, write my book, but also inspired me to build my movement, Moms First. And you know, it's so funny, Erin, too. People are like, well, how'd you come up with the name Moms First? And I was like, listen, try starting a moms organization and go on GoDaddy.com. Everything's taken.
Right? Yeah.
But guess what wasn't taken? Moms First.
Yeah.
Because the idea of putting ourselves was so damn radical that nobody wanted it.
Oh my God. I love it, Rajma. I love it so hard. Okay. First of all, everything you just said, I got to like take 7 steps back because we got to unpack what you just said. First of all, my son starts school at 7:20 and
holy
he gets out 2:25.
Oh what? My God. I thought I had it bad.
No. Isn't that, it's insane for them, number one. Number two, as a working parent, how there's 3 hours left of the workday. So obviously like after school programs have to exist. So feel you on that. The pandemic, I feel like so many, especially my moms listening to this right now can relate. I could relate. I had a 6-month-old at the time and like was just figuring out who I was as a mom, my identity as a working mom, and then trying to keep my business alive, which we were completely in person at the time. You were doing the same with Girls Who Code. It was so stressful. And you're right. You know what I didn't do? Ask for help. I didn't ask for help. And then I developed chronic pain, honestly, because
we get sick.
Yeah.
We get sick. Our bodies fall apart.
Yep. Yes. And then I had to heal. And there was a whole healing journey with that. And so the movement and the book and all that you're doing sort of just coincide together to bring women, moms to the forefront. And I'm so here for it. And guess what? I feel like GoDaddy said, guess what? This was a sign from universe, whatever you want to call it, with that. Because when I talk about putting more self-love into myself to some of my friends, They're like, how do you have time for that? You have, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like a shocking revelation to them. And I'm thinking about, you know, some of my best friends, even listening to this show right now, I could count on one hand the amount of conversations that we've had where they've told me, I took care of myself today.
I know. I know. It's so wild. It's so funny you say that. I was walking my dog this morning and I'm turning 50 this year. And at at 48, as I was thinking about turning 50, I'm like, oh, that year is going to be my year.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to get my Michelle Obama arms. I'm going to go on that silent retreat, right? I'm going to do all the girls' trips. And, you know, I'm going to do Pilates.
Yes.
And we're in April and I've done none of those things, nor do I look at them. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, you know, like why? I know better. I know better. But it's just so hard because there's never enough time. And we just so deprioritize ourselves. And I think the older you get, you know, as you know, launch podcast, my so-called midlife, because when I got into in my mid-40s, I was just like, again, like, why I have everything I thought I wanted. Why do I feel so empty?
Yeah.
Why is my life changing? Why is my body changing? Why? Where is that pouch coming from? I'm working out every day. I'm already not eating the things that I like to eat a cookie a day. Stop doing that. You know, why am I exhausted? Why do I wake up 6 times a day? Why am I so mad and angry all the time? Why are my friends shifting? And why is it so hard to make friends? Like,
oh my God.
Like, so there's like a million things. And so I started my podcast about that. But, you know, I think that part of what is so important is in life is to realize, someone said something that like every 8 years you actually physically change and mentally change. You become a new person.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
You've heard that, right, Erin? And I think the thing is like what I think I miss out on, you miss out on, our girlfriends miss out on, is the ability to like just reflect about like what happened and like where do I want to go? Who do I want to be? What are the things I want to learn? Much less do those things, right? Like I don't even get to like think about like who's the kind of person I want to be. And so that's just so important to me now. And really just cracking how do you find the time, what gives in order to be able to do that.
I love it. And I love that you started your show. You told me that you're nominated for a Webby or you won the Webby.
Yes.
Did you win it?
No, I'm not. I'm nominated.
Manifesting the win.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Let me just tell you something. This conversation is hitting like every depth of my soul because I'm 42. Around 40, things just started shifting.
Yep.
And I started to feel some type of anxiety that I have never felt before. And I had a mentor tell me, like, you've never been this age with this amount of responsibility, with this amount of things going on in your life. And you're probably going through something. I am very clear right now that I'm in perimenopause. Mm-hmm. Okay. She got the period at 11. At 42, things have shifted.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I am navigating as we go through this change, not only, and I think this is part of what you're talking about in your show, as midlifers, we are not only parenting down,
yep,
we're parenting up if we're lucky enough to have parents still here,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
We are taking care of everyone around us. We are taking care of our teams. We're taking care of our families and above and below us. And the person that misses out the most is us. And I find that fascinating. So tell us a little bit more about the show. I know, like, what inspired you to do it? What, when people listen, what can they find? What are you hoping to achieve with it?
So I started the show because it felt like there was a playbook for men for midlife, right? Get a sports car and a hot new wife. But like, there was no playbook for women in midlife. And it was almost like the way we treat midlife women is like irrelevant, sexually irrelevant, physically irrelevant. The largest pay gap happens for women at 50, right? And now I'm sure you're starting to see, I have more friends who are like trying to find that next job and just can't, because all of a sudden we're in the workplace, people look at us like, oh, she's going to be going through perimenopause and she's going to be taking care of elderly parents. No, thank you. Right. Yeah. Whereas men, it's like wine. They just get finer with age. So there's just something very different biologically and socially happening. You know, I call this the midlife penalty, right? It's the investment that we have in women in their health, you know what I mean? And in their work, right? That we don't have. And in fact, they have a penalty for it. And it's funny, in many ways, it's like the motherhood penalty, and having that frame really helped us understand what was happening in motherhood, so we can have conversations about childcare and paid leave. We need to do the same thing in midlife. And I think for so many of us, like, we've been taught to be ashamed of aging rather than to celebrate it and to make this, as what we say in the podcast, like the best time of your life, that we just haven't had these conversations. So I bring on guests to, one, tell their story, but to give real tangible advice. You know what I mean? On menopause, what is perimenopause? What happens to my estrogen and my progesterone? What are my, you know what I mean? What are the real things that I could do? I did in a whole episode on psychedelics, because I don't know about you, but like, I have a lot of friends now that are talking about doing mushrooms. You know what I mean? Psilocybin.
Microdosing.
I grew up in like, you know, the 80s, where I was like, this is your brain on drugs. Like, I've done nothing, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, tell me what it is. What's a journey? How does it happen? What happens to my brain? What happens to my body? What are the benefits? You know, and she really broke it down. And I'm talking to a woman shortly who's like a health expert. I don't know about you, but when I wake up in the morning, I drink a water, I have a coffee, and I go to the gym.
Yeah.
And I love me some, Barry's Boot Camp and, you know, some intense cardio. Yep. I just started strength training. You need to listen to this. But so that's all wrong, right?
Who was this? Because I've had—
I'm Dr. Stacey Sims is who I'm based
on. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
She's
talking about the weight.
Yeah, and she's talking about— And the strength training, but like, why is that important? How much protein should I be getting? Like, so for example, we're at this age supposed to be getting 98 grams of protein
a
day. Yeah. And especially when you're dropping estrogen, you know, we're not getting that, right?
Yeah.
So like, how do you fit it in? So what I've started doing is just put a scoop of protein powder in my coffee in the morning before I work out. And then you got to eat 45 minutes when you're back. Again, like tips like this that were just so mind-blowing. I interviewed this incredible comedian, Zarna Garg. She was a stay-at-home mom. And then one day her kids, you'll appreciate this as a comedian. One day her kids challenged her to go to improv. And this is, again, she's been home for like 21 years, right? Like, she's been a stay-at-home mom basically her whole career, right? She's in her mid-40s. She goes to do stand-up. She kills it.
Yes.
She's like, oh, like, and now she's like this famous comedian. But this idea that like your whole life can change in your midlife, like everything can change.
Yes.
It's possible. And so just again, real tangible advice and stories. And what's helped me, Erin, is like when I started the podcast, I'm turning 50. I was so upset about it. Right.
Yeah.
Like every time I go to the beach, I'm like, what the fuck? You know, put the big sweatshirt on, like don't like to really look in the mirror of what's happening in my body. Feel like my best years like are behind me. Like I barely get, like, because of menopause, my memory is just shot, right? And so, but what this podcast has really helped me with is like, oh no, Reshma, you're wrong. Like the best is yet to come.
Yes.
The best is yet to come.
Yes.
And it's all about your mindset. It's all about, and now when I walk out, I'm like, I look good. You know
that's
what
right.
I mean? Like,
that's right. Michelle Obama is right here.
I look flyer. I am more confident. I am more wise. I am like, haven't even hit my stride. You know, it's all coming. And so it's been such a gift for me, right, to do this, because it's allowed me to shift my thinking and approach this stage of my life just really differently.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, I love it so much. And you're so true. It is such a mindset. And I will tell you things that used to work to like drop a pound or two in my 20s and 30s. They don't work.
No.
There's no strategy there. It's just like eat what fuels you, you know, feel good. But you're right. The mindset shift changes everything. And I'm so glad that you have a platform for women to feel seen as we go through this and talk about it, because there, I just, you know, it kind of was like this like secret for generations before us. It was like we talked about it, but not a lot. And I love that it's coming to the forefront.
And I feel like there were a lot of things we were told that are not true. Like your metabolism slows down the older you get.
Yeah.
Not true. So what my piece of advice for you, Erin, is that if you start doing strength training, if you replace one or two cardio workouts with strength now, by the time, because the difference between men and women is women have two moments, 45 and 60, where they have these drops, right? Whereas men age linearly. It doesn't, it's not like you, so like there is a difference between, I promise you, between 42 and 46.
Yeah, I believe you.
So, but if you know that that's coming, and you've now like basically built muscle, built tone, you know, when that happens, you will be able to move through the freshman 15, you know what I mean? Like move through that, what's ultimately going to start happening in terms of your belly fat concentrating in the mid area, because you will have built muscle there. I didn't know that, right? I mean, I was already doing a little bit of that, but I was like a cardio girl, right?
So Me too.
That was like a big, big change for me. You know, the second thing I think that was a big, you know, thing that I learned is that like people tell you, well, the older you get, your sexual appetite just decreases. It's like your libido is gone. It's just inevitable. That's also not true. Like,
it's less about,
and what I learned, you know, from Dr. Kelly Casperson, that it's less about biologically. For women, women have always thought about sex in terms of what's happening in their mind. So when women get tired of sleeping with the same person, their same husband, right, for the past, it's not because their libido is gone. It's just they're bored.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it happens with our libido is connected to our mind.
Yeah.
And so that was like really, and so like women who know this that I meet now are often having the best sex of their life. You know what I mean? At 50.
Okay. Reshma. Wow. This is the conversation that I needed to have today. Cause it's challenging. I feel like from a perspective for me, if I'm just talking about my own, here we go. I've never talked about my own sex life on this show before.
Go for it.
But just for me, my brain is like this constantly, So like when it comes time for me and the hubs to like have fun, I'm like, I'm tired.
Or I'm like, right. Or it's like, okay, I know I got to check it off because it's been a little too long and I know that's bad for the marriage. So, okay, it's 11 o'clock, baby. I'm ready. Like, scheduled sex.
It's like scheduled time. Yes, it's like a calendar thing. Yeah. Like, okay, got to get one in this month, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, all right.
Exactly.
Well, this made me I'm so glad we talked about this. Okay, this gives me hope. This gives me joy because, you know, sometimes I think back to my younger self. And there was like, I really realized like I didn't really have anxiety, or maybe I just didn't have the vernacular to call it anxiety back then. It was just over something as simple as like a test, right? Like I think back to like my college days and it was like schoolwork and, but the pressure builds as we continue to age and there's so much,
right. And I think monotony is hard.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, you know, like we're not 80 yet. And that the other thing is, Erin, women have never lived this long. Part of the reason why they don't know anything about menopause is there's only five mammals that have ever gone in menopause. They don't have enough information.
Right.
Right. And so we don't know what to do. And so there's a lot of work. I think there's a lot of information for men on what to do. And you see a Jeff Bezos or a Mark, you know, you literally see the midlife crisis happen with men in high profile positions. Right. But with women, you know, that is not our playbook.
Right. Right?
It is not just Botox and fillers and BLT, you know what I mean? And like salads, right? It's like we can have another playbook that works for us and that we want. But part of it is just dispelling what I realize with the podcast is like dispelling a lot of the myths that are out
there.
Okay. I'm so excited. I'm like your new number one subscriber. Okay. So everybody listening, you have to go and listen to this show, and they can find it anywhere, right?
Yep. Apple, my so-called iTunes. Midlife, Apple, iTunes, wherever you listen to your podcast.
I love it so much. Okay, peeps, pause for a quick sec. I know we're so deep in this convo, but I have to tell you about something that can literally change the way you handle uncertainty at work. You know that feeling when everything is up in the air and you're just waiting for the other shoe to drop? I know. What if instead of spiraling, you could actually thrive in the unknown? That's exactly what we're teaching in our Working Through Uncertainty workshop. This isn't some boring lecture. It's high energy, interactive, and fun. Our expert improv facilitators will help you learn to adapt, pivot, and make confident decisions even when nothing is going as planned. Join us in person with up to 100 people for 2 hours or virtually with up to 50 people for 90 minutes and walk away with real practical tools to navigate uncertainty like a pro. Go to learntoimproveit.com to book your spot. That's learntoimproveit.com. Now back to the show. Okay, I want to talk about this. You've done so many different things. So when I was focusing on you, I had to think, what do my peeps need in this moment? Because you are like an incredible advocate for women. But what I was really struck about was how you've advocated for women at work in so many different ways. Is there something that you see as the biggest mistake that women have made when advocating for themselves? Is there something that sticks out to you when we're thinking about somebody listening to the show and they're like, you know what? I want more paid leave for my maternity leave. What is it?
I think that we think that we're not supposed to have swag. And I think swag rewards the day.
Yes.
And that's my biggest lesson, right? And you see what's happening right now. We are enamored with strength, but not just in men and women too. And I think for so long, we've taught women to be people pleasers, to shrink ourselves, to make us small, to say our please and thank yous, to apologize when we ask for a salary increase, or not to raise our hand for that promotion, or not speak first. And we thought that being a good girl, the rules that worked in grade school would work in the workplace. And it's just not true.
Yeah.
And so we have to find another flow. And so for me, what I have learned, I'd been interviewed on Stephen's Bartlett's podcast, and there was this clip I told about a story that went viral. And I was like, it was went viral, and men liked it and women liked it. And I was sitting there with Ron. I'm like, huh, what is it? And it's a story that I tell basically about how, I grew up poor, working class, refugee. Everybody in my town went to community college. I was obsessed with going to Yale Law School. But when I got there 3 times after I applied, I could not raise my hand, Erin, because everybody was talking a different language, right? They went to vacation places I'd never heard of before. I felt like I was dumb. I wasn't smart. I had what they call I don't use this word anymore, but what people would refer to as imposter syndrome, right? Mm-hmm. The older I got, the more, as I built Girls Who Code, I got to be in more powerful rooms. And the story I told, I had been asked to give a speech at Bill Gates' summit. And I'm I have the last speech, probably the only speech they gave to a woman. And it's like, I'm giving the talk, and in the front row is Bill and Warren. And as I'm sitting there in backstage, I'm thinking, they gave me 8 minutes to talk. I wish I had 12. Full of swag. And I'm like, wow. In my mind, I'm like, how did I go from being that girl in that Yale Law School class to this woman standing here in the green room? And I was like, because I've met every powerful man, presidents, prime ministers, CEOs. And I'm always like, you're running what?
Yes.
And I tell this story, and I have this line, me and my girls can run circles around you. But when I tell this story, I tell it with some swag. And it's interesting because I think we think when women show up that way, people don't like it, right? But this place, the single, hundreds of millions of views goes, what? And so Ron and I were talking about it. And I was like, that's interesting. I think it was because I told the story with a little bit of swag. and a little bit of self-deprecation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's that like, you know what I'm saying? For me, that works.
Yeah.
Right? And so what I wanted, because right now with everything that is happening with the dismantling of pipeline programs, you know what I mean? With the taking away of opportunities from women, like we are under threat. We are, and when I say it's not, we are, it is real. It is not, this ain't no fire drill. Like
yeah.
this is real.
Yeah.
So we can't afford, because every time I speak, and I'm sure you do too, someone will raise their hand and be like, how do I get rid of my imposter syndrome? Or I don't really, I'm like, no, dude, like, no, you don't. Stop saying that word. You have to stop questioning whether you belong, because right here, right now, nobody allowed you to get in this room for free.
That's
you
right.
earned it times two. You
That's
did not sneak
right.
in. So you cannot afford, we cannot afford to question our worth. We got to move
right.
on. You know what
yes.
I mean? And claim
yes.
our place and move on, right? And fight this war. Because if we spend all this time, because that's the point, right? When you take away these opportunities from women, right? We all become Reshma sitting in that Yale Law School class,
yeah.
wondering if I should
yeah.
raise my hand or not. We become small.
Yes.
And,
yes.
And that is a strategy. Like that is a tactic. That is a strategy, right? To take away our power and our ability. And we fall for it every time because to me, I'm a data girl, right? If you simply just look at the data, like the vast majority of those getting their master's degrees or bachelor's degrees and high school valedictorians are women.
Yes.
Like our SAT scores, our ACT scores, our LSAT scores, our
yes.
MCAT scores. Like we are always been smarter. That has been the case since like the 70s when they started
yes.
letting us get into these places. So why have we for 55 years questioned our ability? Because we have been tricked into it by these books that tell you you need more confidence, by these books that tell you you need to get the skill set, you need to get a mentor, you need to do this, you need to do that. We have been conned and tricked and we have fallen for it. And so we got to stop.
Yes. Stop talking, start doing is what
yes.
you're saying. And I'm
yes.
so here, like literally, I feel like I'm like amening in the choir. Okay. I am legit so here for this conversation. And I will say, and when you mentioned you in your conversation just there, I don't say that word anymore. That was going to be my next question.
No,
to you. Why don't you? And now I love it. Now I know. And I'm going to say this. I talk a lot about changing scarcity statements into abundance statements. And for a really long time, I would appear confident on the outside, but there was this subconscious thought in the back of my mind was, it was you in the Yale class. It was, I'm not worthy. And I think what you're even pushing here is like showing up and not just embodying it, but like believing it with your whole heart that you belong in that room, that you belong at that table, that you belong. And I think that for me is such a big takeaway from this because you and also the thing, Reshma, is that you're a living example of it.
No, I appreciate that.
You
I appreciate
really
that.
Are. You are. And you're doing it. And so it's one thing to talk the talk, but like to watch you walk the walk is so
I
beautiful.
That.
And I think,
that.
Yeah. And I want to talk to, because I titled the show Pay Up because I love the title of your book. And I know so many women are going to listen to this. You've been in so many different roles in your life. Like you've been in politics, you're an activist, you're an attorney, right? Like you've done all these different things, a writer, a podcast host. How have you personally advocated for yourself? Is it by believing it? Is there something you do? Like my peeps are probably like, how do I channel Reshma? How do I channel Reshma? What do we do?
Well, what I'll say is like, I know my God, we each have a God-given gift.
Yeah.
And before I got to this place, I'd be like, oh, I want to do this. I would chase the shiny object.
Yep.
And now I know like my gift that God has given me is my ability to communicate. Like I say like, I want to be the LeBron James of speeches.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And every day, this is the practice, right? Of like
yes.
honing my skill, which means I got to get a lot of critical feedback and I need people around me that are going to tell me how to get better. And so like, I know that that is my skill. And through the blessings of God, like it's also the thing I love. Like I walk around all day long with a lot of thoughts, a lot of things, right? And part of what I have to practice is how to just turn it off.
Yeah.
Like I have a really hard, I have a hard time having fun, you know, yeah, because I see the things that it's all about, like, you know, like fixing the world. Right. And yeah. so that's like definitely, definitely strong, but I've gotten to a place where it's like, I don't need a job or need something to make me feel like I am worthy anymore. Mm. And I needed those things. I needed those things before. And so I think the thing to say to everybody is like, find why you're on this earth and what your purpose is. And as if you wake up every day being like, what can I do to serve the people? Like that will be your guide. And that has really been my guide in everything that I've done. So like when I look at my life, it is a through line. I'm yeah. always about women and girls.
Yep.
It often is about like communication and like building and like having platforms that allow me to help and heal the greatest amount of people that I possibly can. And when I deviate from that, those things never work out.
Yes.
You know, like when I yep. try to go do a U-turn, oh, let me go start this biz, does not work out. It just doesn't, you know, I'm always put back into exactly where I need to be, where I feel very lucky. You know, I feel a lot of purpose. I think the thing I struggle with is I have to remember I'm not alone.
Yeah.
Especially like right now, because it's like the fight is killing me. Like I'm yeah. so sad and just exhausted, you know, from the constant. And I just think that I have to remember, well, it's not just me. And you're allowed to take a break. Yes. You're allowed to watch White Lotus.
Oh my God.
Saturday and Sunday.
Yes. Yes.
I'm not fully, okay. I didn't watch the last episode, so don't tell me anything.
But I'm yeah. listen, I'm like literally everybody's like, Erin, you need to watch it just so you can be like, Piper, no.
Yeah. You know? Yes, you would. Oh my God, you're right. You would.
Piper, no.
You're Parker Posley. You are. Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm like, but Piper, no. Because no. I live in Charleston. I'm like a Midwestern, half Southern gal. And like, I have this nasal twang. And so everybody's like, say Piper, no.
Oh my God, so true.
Yeah. Okay, that is my new show that I'm going to binge. But I feel you on that. Because like, even last night, let me just say this. Okay. I have so many steps to take back, but just right where we are here. Last night, I came home from a 2-day conference that I was speaking at. We had workshops. I was like on since Sunday night. I had to sit on my hands on the plane to not respond to email yeah. and to actually like relax and watch a show. And I was like, I'm going to have a dirty martini before yes. I get on this plane
yeah.
so I can relax. And then I did, but it was so hard to turn it off. And I think as people who know their God-given talent, which you clearly have found it, and we are so grateful, like you are walking, you are in alignment with the assignment, right?
Okay? I like that. I'm
you are in
with
it.
The assignment. I'm going to use that. It's great.
Use that. You're in it. And it's so wonderful to watch. And I think somebody who's listening here today who isn't in alignment with that, this is what I want to clarify for them, because Reshma knows her gift. And I want to ask you this. How did you know what your gift was? Is it just what lights you up?
I don't think I found it until I was in my late 30s.
Yeah. But how did you know this is my gift?
It's the thing that I feel most at peace at. Like mm-hmm. As weird as it sounds, I feel most at peace and present when I'm on stage teaching something.
Me too.
And I feel like it's so, you know, it's so, because I don't know. And right, isn't it like the top three things that people are afraid of? Like more than like yes. cobras is yes. like getting up on stage. For me, that's home. Like
me
that
too.
Is that if I haven't been out there, I get yeah. my husband's like, God, go give a speech somewhere. You
right.
know what I mean? Because it's like, I just feel like it makes me feel anxious. So like, I think coming into recognizing like, oh, yeah. this is also where I feel home. And I wasn't always good. It took, as you know,
yes.
it takes time. You perfect a story. You say the thing over and over again and you know what hits, what doesn't hit. You have to mix it up. Like, so I think I realized that I think I'm a fighter more than like others. Like what's happening in the country right now, like this is like where I shine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like this is where, because I like to fight, right? It's not I like to fight, but like I'm comfortable in that position. And so like these kinds of moments are also where I feel comfortable. But I think you have to, like my advice to people is you got to try a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And you got to focus less on the job and more on almost like the topic.
Yeah.
And the, or the people that you want to serve. It's funny that God gave me two boys because I just, when I see a young girl, I think I see myself, right?
Yeah.
At that age. And, you know, and it's like, I'm getting more empathy for boys as a boy mom.
Yeah.
Of like what happens, but it's different, right? In terms of like the connection that I have to the plight of women and girls and our suffering and our awesomeness and all of those things. It's just in me.
I got to tell you, you know, when you just feel called to share something, I'm going to share this with you. I also was shocked when I had a little boy. We have like a whole IVF story journey, lots of genetic mutations things. We found out that we had one embryo on ice for 5 years and we found out it was a girl.
Ah.
And it was like the only embryo that we like had that wasn't genetically mutated. And so I had built this like,
yeah,
story in my mind of how to become a girl mom. I obviously am a woman. I love women. I'm an advocate for women. I feel like I want to continue to help women find their voice. And so we named her Zoe, which means life. And her middle name is going to be Isabella. Life is beautiful. And we, you know, transferred, did all the things. And she did not take. Okay. So I did not get my little girl. However, I feel her spirit like so inside of me. And I have a little bracelet that says La Vie est belle, which life is beautiful in French. But I feel her like right now in this conversation, Reshma. I could almost cry because I do feel
I'm crying.
I'm gonna cry. Like so okay, beautiful. And I have a fake eyelash on top of a fake eyelash, so things might fall off. But like, I truly do feel like you specifically as a human being on this earth are doing the work that I feel she is like working through me to do, and hopefully continuing to share your legacy with the world. So thank you for what you're doing, because I as a boy mom also find it very interesting to see it through his eyes. Because there was a time when I was like, "What?" Yeah. You know, I was like anti the man for a little bit, and it has really it's really
changing.
Like,
the older they're getting, and I just wonder. It's so funny you say that. Like every child I miscarried was a girl, and I wanted a girl more. I will say it is the one thing. If people say, "What's your one regret in life?" It's like not having a daughter. Like I wanted that relationship so bad, and for whatever reason, God was like, "No." And maybe it would have, maybe it would be too hard to be my daughter. I would have had too many expectations or too many things. Like I just don't have on my sons. You know, like in the same way, but I think that is right. Like we get to be like big sister mom to like millions of women and millions of girls that we get to like support and help. And it is absolutely true that my son is my biggest teacher. Meaning, like,
so true.
For a long time, like I'm like, you're fine. You're a boy. You're like the world will be good to you. I'm not even gonna open your backpack. You know, like literally.
Yeah.
And then this. Ever since this election, I'm just like, oh, no. Like, men are the ticket to our emancipation.
I'm so and with you on this.
Men
I'm
are the so ticket. And like, they're like my husband, like, I mean, like, I married a good man, you know? And I'm like, I need to be organizing you guys, right? Like, you want it. You want to be in. Why am I chasing this percentage of the population that's just like, we need new alliances. And it does start with our sons. And it does start. And I am, he would always say to me after I gave my imposter syndrome speech, literally took me aside in the alley. We're at Smith College. And he's like, I didn't agree with you. This, and this. Like, because in his mind, he's like, what are you talking about? Like, the girls raise their hand more in my class. When we're walking down the street, mommy, in New York, every homeless person I see is a man, a lonely man, he says, right? Like, what do you mean? What do you mean?
And how old is he?
Eight.
Old is he?
Eight. No, now
oh
he's
my
10.
God,
now he's 10.
Yes.
Now he's 10.
Okay.
But like when we were having this conversation, right? It's like, and now, and having to see the world through his eyes and explain it made me maybe better in my views and made me understand I too had been bought into the zero sum game. Like it's not about us or them. It's about both of us. And boys are suffering. Men are suffering. And so are women. And so what does the world look like when we come together? And it was like a big, you know, it was like a, it was just, it's been like this kind of beautiful, like come circle for me that I needed.
Oh my gosh. I feel like you just summed up exactly how I feel in a much more beautiful story, because I do think I was given a son for the same reason that I was given to, and I was, he's actually super empathetic. My husband is like one of the most empathetic. Mine. Yeah, males, right.
They're so like, high emotional intelligence. It makes me uncomfortable.
Me
like,
too.
I'm like, stop me touching too. Me or hugging me. Right?
Yes, yes, yes. And they love the bond that a little boy has to their mom is like so beyond special.
I needed to feel love like this.
Yeah, same.
I don't. Same. I was never been loved this way in the way that my sons love me. And it's like it's such a. I say now, I wish every woman had a son.
I do,
you know,
too.
How they always say, like, oh, men are so happy to have sons. And I'm like, so interesting to me, right? Because it's like, it's actually really like a son's love is like epic.
Agreed. Agreed. And you don't, you know, I've watched my brother and my mom. I watched my husband and his mom. And I see it. And I never understood it until this moment. But it's just full circle for what you're doing. I think we needed these little men to help continue to be allies for women and help to raise them to be the empathetic men and leaders we want to see in the world alongside us, right?
That's right.
And so you're just doing such amazing things. I could literally talk to you all day.
This was such a great conversation.
I know. I like laughed and cried. Okay. But listen, let me ask you this. I have two questions for you. We always ask our guests. It's called Workday Playdate. How are you going to make work more playful today? What are you going to do today? Watch White Lotus. Maybe.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to finish White Lotus for 15 minutes in my workday or 20 minutes in my workday and feel a little sneaky, right?
Like I love it.
A little TV time in the workday is always just a guilty pleasure. You know what I mean?
A little brain break.
Yeah.
And now, every time I have somebody like Ra was on the show, Ra Goddess again, this is our mutual friend. She was on the show. She was like, I'm going to go dance in my kitchen. I was like, what song?
Yeah.
And I literally like went down and did it. So maybe I'll sneak a little TV in today too. And then lastly, I know we want to tell everybody to listen to your show, find you on your podcast, but where else could they find you? Give them all the things.
Come to Instagram. I'm at Reshma Sajani on Instagram and LinkedIn. So.
Okay. And then we'll link your podcast.
Thank you, Erin.
Tune
this is so
in.
Great.
We're manifesting a Webby win. And I'm just so grateful that I've had this conversation and get to know you.
Me too.
So, so proud.
It made my week. I appreciate it, Erin. Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Okay. Let's just take a collective deep breath because that was a masterclass. Like, I need to replay this conversation just to soak in all the gold Reshma just dropped. So let's recap the biggest takeaway here. It isn't you. It is the system. You're not failing. You're not working hard enough. The problem is we were sold a myth that if we just try harder, we'll get what we deserve, but we have to start demanding it. Now, here's the deal too. We talked a lot about her show, My So-Called Midlife, as well. I would love for you to tune into that show if you are experiencing the midlife like I am. There were so many aha moments in there for me. So here's your homework. Here's step one. Grab Reshma's book, Pay Up. If you've been feeling stuck, frustrated, or just tired of the same old grind, this book will open your eyes in the best way. Step two, I want you to think about one way you're going to advocate for yourself this month. Maybe it's negotiating that raise. Maybe it's settling a hard boundary. Maybe it's calling out some BS when you see it. Whatever it is, I want you to think about it, say it out loud, write it down, and make it happen. And here's step three. If today resonated with you in any way, whether we're talking about her book, Pay Up, the amazing work she's doing for Moms First, or her new podcast, share this episode with another woman in your life who needs to hear it. Let's spread the word, because when one of us wins, we all win. So that's it for today, my peeps. But don't forget, you are worthy, you are deserving, and you do not have to settle for less than what you are worth. Now go out there, get what you deserve, and remember, every workday is a playdate waiting to happen. I'll see you next time.